get started. Thank you. I call the meeting of the Planning Commission to order, and I'll ask our new Commissioner Anderson if he'll lead us in the flag salute. So everybody, please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. I call a roll.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Bentz.
Present.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Here.
Commissioner Cooper.
Here.
Commissioner DeRees.
Here.
Commissioner Wolf.
Here.
And Chairperson Ward.
Here.
All present.
Next on the list is to approve the agenda. Do I have a motion?
I so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. I call the question.
Commissioner Bentz.
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson.
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper.
Yes.
Commissioner DeRees.
Yes.
Commissioner Wolf.
Yes.
Chairperson Ward.
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
We're going to have a couple of opportunities tonight for the public to chime in. But right now, we have a public comment section for anybody who wants to bring up an issue that's not before us tonight. So if you do, please take the lectern. Otherwise, we'll close that off. Okay, seeing none, we'll proceed. Next item is the consent calendar, and this is just for routine matters. Is there a motion on that?
So moved.
Okay. Basically, the issue on the consent calendar is to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Does anybody have any question on the minutes? Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. The vote?
Commissioner Bentz?
Yes.
Commissioner DeRees?
Controversial issue. And I just want to assure you that the folks up here, the folks in the staff, are going to do the right thing. This is mandated by a law, and we've got to get through it. Tonight is not a time to debate the merits or evils of global warming or anything like that, although if you feel compelled, you want to use your couple of minutes to do it, go ahead. We're not going to cut off anybody. Everybody's got a view, and this is the place to hear it. There's a good possibility we're not going to get through this tonight. That being the case, we'll have a follow-up meeting, probably a little less formal, because we got to check the boxes and plug it into an Excel and just see how it plays out. Our mission is to come up with a plan that's unique to this city and not just a one-size-fits-all. We've got a lot of good things going for us, and there's no doubt in my mind that we can meet the state's objectives without coming down with some draconian measures that's going to be very costly in terms of staff time and homeowner anxiety. So put your faith in the city and your city officials. We're all on the same sheet of music with you guys tonight. So having given my little speech, let's go ahead with the presentation. And Warren, you might want to chime in on how we're going to proceed, because this is not your normal kind of meeting.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Tonight is just a study session, so this is an opportunity for the Planning Commission as well as the public to ask questions and give us some input on this Climate Action Plan program. Callie Taylor has been basically the staff lead on this program. She'll be walking us through this and giving us the overview. The way we see it working out is we'll have Callie start by making the presentation. We think it would be useful then to take some public comment to get people's thoughts. And then what we want to do is start to discuss the individual toolbox measures, which Callie will explain what those are a little later. But what we're looking for from the Planning Commission is basically a general idea of which types of measures you think we could support or which ones you think you might, as a commission, through these individual measures, which are in Attachment A of your staff report, is basically a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a we're not quite sure, go look at it some more. We don't need to make a final decision tonight. This is a study session. The council's not scheduled to hear this until March, so it's very easy for us to bring this back in February for the commission to look at once again, which we're thinking is probably actually a good idea after we've had a chance to kind of crunch the numbers a little bit more. So I think let's use this as an opportunity to ask questions, get a little bit more information out. There's no pressure tonight to make a final decision. With that, I'll turn it over to Callie.
I just have one comment since this is on television. The expression or term toolbox is thrown around. I'm not sure everybody understands the context of what a toolbox means in terms of putting this together. Could you briefly explain that to everybody?
Well, basically, these different components or measures that we've gotten from Air Pollution Control District are measures that could reduce greenhouse gas emissions to one amount or another. So there's a collection of about 40 of these. So they've referred to these as basically being a box of tools. They don't expect any city to use all of them. It's basically your choice is to rummage around in the toolbox and pull out those that you think fit best for Atascadero. So that's conceptually why they use the term toolbox.
Thank you.
All right, I'll start to do an overview of kind of where we're at and quickly how we got here so that everyone is up to date and kind of at the same place on this. So we have a $400,000 grant through PG&E, SoCalGas, and the SLOE-PCD for climate action plans. So this is for the cities of Atascadero, Paso Robles, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Morro Bay, and Pismo Beach. And we've all agreed to participate to work through this process, and then through this process, each city will create their own individual climate action plan. The toolbox is the large overview that kind of the grouping of all the measures together that these cities can choose from. So in Atascadero, the Planning Commission has been appointed to act as the steering committee. We were appointed by the City Council to review the climate action plan and to help in the development of the process. We're actually going to go through each specific measure so that we can get your opinion as to if this could work for Atascadero, which is ultimately what we want to know through this process. So we'll take a step back and say, what is a climate action plan? Why do we have to do this process? So a climate action plan is a policy document. It's similar to a general plan or a redevelopment plan that outlines some broad overview goals for the city. It's intended to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and it's intended to comply with AB 32. AB 32 says that the state will reduce greenhouse gas levels by 2020 to 1990 levels. It's intended to improve energy efficiency and integrate sustainability into municipal and citywide planning and operations. So it's basically our plan to how we're going to meet the state's goals. Having a climate action plan will demonstrate compliance with AB 32. It'll also help with CEQA streamlining. So basically, if you have a project that's consistent with your climate action plan, that project is considered to not have an impact on greenhouse gas reductions. It'll actually kind of help us streamline some of those CEQA processes. Another opportunity would be for grants. If something's identified in our climate action plan, it might give us a leg up in applying for grants for city projects like trails or new bridges, bikeways, things like that. So one of the things that that we've had to struggle with on this is, what if we don't do this process? I know that's come up several times. And there is no no fine if we don't adopt a climate action plan. When we get to the end of the process, if the city council decides that it's not appropriate at this time, it's not that the city will be punished receive any immediate penalty if we don't adopt this climate action plan. But one thing to consider is that if we don't address it, it makes the city vulnerable as we move forward. So to explain this, when we're doing a CEQA analysis, greenhouse gas emissions are something that have to be analyzed. It's just like impacts to trees or to visual impacts to the neighbors. Greenhouse gases are one of those things that we have to consider. If we don't go through the process and we don't start to address how we're going to figure out how we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, then it puts the city open to litigation or to address emissions. Then we wind up at the dotted blue line, so the business as usual forecast. If the state has requested that we reduce by the dotted blue line right here. So this winds up being about a 19,000 metric tons of CO2 reduction from the adjusted business as usual forecast. So where do we get those numbers? Here we have a kind of these different calculations of where we're at and where we're going with greenhouse gases. So we have a 172,000 metric tons of business as usual forecast. That's where we wind up in 2020 if we do nothing. If we show the reduction from state and local measures, so this is basically everything we've already done. We reduced by 32,000, brings us down quite a bit to 140,000 metric tons. From there, we wind up with our target, so that 19,000 metric tons that we need to reduce. So what is a metric ton of CO2? This is one of the things that comes up fairly often. Driving the average car from Atlanta to Las Vegas, about 2,000 miles, powering the average American home for 1 month, or 350 garbage bags rotting in the landfill is considered to be equal to 1 metric ton of CO2. So in the greenhouse gas reduction measure toolbox, there are 36 potential reduction measures identified. So we're going to try and go through each one of those measures tonight if we can get through them, and we might need to continue those to the next meeting. Each measure actually has several actions associated with it, and they fall into the groups of energy, transportation and land use, off-road vehicles, water, solid waste, and trees. So when you actually pull up the Excel spreadsheet, it's a very intricate spreadsheet. There's several tabs across the bottom, and I'm actually going to go ahead and pull it up on the screen so that we can kind of walk through that with everyone here. So this is the first tab that has the reduction measures on it. So when you open it up, you'd probably see actually the introduction first, so I'll show you that one. This kind of explains how you would go through the program. So say on this one, it is energy efficiency outreach and incentive programs. If we can get 35% of the households participating, that will give us a certain calculation of greenhouse gas reductions. If we want to be really, try and make this target even higher, we could say we're hoping to get 45% of households participating. And then that will change the total reductions associated with this measure, which is shown here in the second column down in estimated GHG reduction potential for that measure. So it can take some time to go through all of this. What we're hoping to do tonight is actually just to talk about the language in the measures, which is in attachment one of your report, and then staff will go back later and actually plug these measures into the toolbox so that you don't have to do that portion of it. And some of the measures have more reduction potential than others, so we'll point that out as we go through which ones are going to have the kind of the most bang for the buck. If we do a few of these really high-impact measures, those will have a lot more reduction than doing several dozen of the other ones. So after we go through it, all of these measures tonight, we'll bring it back to you again. This Planning Commission will make a recommendation to City Council, and from there we'll start working on the draft climate action plan. Even at that point, it's not a formalized document that will be presented. It's a draft, and we'll keep working through the draft several times. So this is something that we're all going to be looking at several more times before we consider anything for adoption. And with that, we'll take some questions from the Planning Commission and open it up to the public.
Wow. Okay. Why don't we start down here? Any questions?
I have a question. So let's take, just for example, 4A, which you did have up on the screen, Energy Efficiency Outreach and Incentive. And I was looking at the estimated GHG reduction potential, and the number that was plugged in there on my paperwork was 396. Where did that come from?
So that comes from the standard assumptions that are plugged into those calculations at the bottom. So when the consultant put this toolbox together, they put in, then it'll raise or lower the greenhouse gas reduction potential.
Okay. We also have implemented some of these things. As I go through the toolbox, I know that we're doing recycling at the public parks. I know that we have certain very aggressive policies about trees and things of that nature. Do we get credit for those things that we're already doing? Is one question that I've got.
We do. That is part of where we get these numbers that are shown on here. So things that we've already done are shown with the green line. That's including state measures and local measures. We don't have a whole lot of credit so far from local measures. Mm-hmm. We haven't done sort of the ones on the list that make the really big impact. So we'll be talking about some of those today. But then part of it is also the commitment to continue doing those things we have been doing. Mm-hmm. We only get credit for what we've done to date. Anything in the future, we have to commit to actually continuing through with in order to get the credit for that.
Okay. Was every city, I noticed that there are six cooperating cities, of which we are one, and was every city given this identical packet of information? Because in my view, our city is quite different from Morro Bay, for example, or, you know, Pismo. I mean, we have 1 million trees in our city, and I don't think Pismo and Morro Bay have that. So there's quite a bit of different, there's a number of different factors, I think, that differentiate our city from others.
Definitely. The toolbox is a standard option of potential measures. So that part is the same that's been given to every city. But it is pre-calculated with all of this, all the data about that city. So if you go to the toolbox itself, and you go all the way to the last few pages on here, it'll talk about the demographic data, assumptions, targets, and even the greenhouse gas reduction targets for each individual city. So all of that is actually programmed into the toolbox. When you first open the toolbox, it'll ask you to plug in the name of your city, and then it pre-populates all the data in there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go right down the line here. You've got any questions?
Currently have, and that has been calculated, like the 35%, for example. And I could be wrong. Math's not my strong suit, but I came up with if we implemented every one of these things at this particular level, we would still only come up with about 16,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent. Where do we come up with the other 3,000 or 4,000 that's needed? And what are the implications of that?
Then I wouldn't really pay attention to the numbers that are in there when you first open it up. as far as the what each measure calculates, because we're not going to use all of those measures, so some of them will be stricken completely out of the equation. Other ones we can bump way up, you know, things that we feel passionate about, planting trees. We've actually been making great strides in things like installing solar in the North County. People are just doing it on their own. If we found a way to promote or incentivize that, we could probably assume even greater potential from those measures.
Okay, thank you.
I went through this, and on the energy part, a couple of things jumped out at me, and I feel I should comment. Number one, some of the programs that were put forth a number of years ago where cities and municipalities would participate in bonds and other schemes where homeowners could retrofit their home and then the debt would be added to their property tax home mortgage. And what happened, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and all the groups that underwrote insurance said, uh-uh, because they did not want to be in a secondary position. So I see in here a temptation to go back and do some of that stuff. So I would suggest that we resist that for those reasons. Now, another thing that jumped out at me in several places, and that is comments on solar water heaters. Years ago, these were the vogue. They were very maintenance intensive. They didn't work. To the extent that some of these measures can be made voluntarily. I'll give you an example. As a voluntary program pushed by the fire departments, they have everybody check and renew the batteries on their smoke detectors once a year. It has a tremendous effect. And I think with public education, a lot can be done without developing draconian measures of mandatory audits of everybody's home. So I would encourage that whatever we end up with, that we try to rely on the good graces of the people that live here. I think they'll get behind a program. But if we make something that is just ram it down their throat, I don't think it's going to work. So that's my comment. And if there are no others, I guess this is a good time to throw it open to the public to chime in on, and let's just limit it to the those measures that relate to energy saving. So you get 3 minutes each, and grab the lectern and just like any other meeting, tell us your name and...
Yeah, the name is Bob Martz, Tascadero resident, and I really think it's very unfortunate that this fine planning commission and that the city council and this city has to endure the nonsense of AB 32. I guess you're seeing where I'm going to go here. But I don't know how many other state-sponsored $400,000 commissions are wandering around the state and various other communities, but I'm sure there's a bunch. Let's look at some of the facts. The man-caused CO2 is not the cause of any significant global warming. There's so much data out there to prove that. For instance, the CO2 has increased, the level in the atmosphere has increased slightly and steadily over the last 100 years. But like 38 parts of CO2 per 100,000 molecules of air. But from 1950, the global temp first increased, oh, get to worry about it. Then it decreased, oh, everybody's worried about, you know, another ice age. Then it increased again, cloud cover, whether the cloud is causing a reflection of energy into space or holding down the heat of the earth, they don't take these things into account. Some of the things the models do protect, it's kind of interesting. Same models that predict catastrophe, if all of the nations in the world were to comply immediately with the Kyoto Treaty, that is, bring it back to the 1990 level, the temperature change by the year 2100 would be a tenth of a degree Fahrenheit. Another thing that the model predicts, all those catastrophe models. If all of the cars in the world got 43 miles per gallon instantly, the temperature change in the year 2100 would be another tenth of a degree Fahrenheit. It's really silly. There are so many other things, like the Chinese records show temperatures greater than now in the years between 2000 and 500 BC. I don't know, it wasn't any SUVs back there to cool it down or heat it up. Zero to 400 AD, again, was hotter temperature then than now. And between the year 1000 to 1200 AD, it was hotter then. And that's how Greenland got its name when the Vikings discovered it. That's a big ice sheet right now. Well, talking about ice sheets, the Arctic ice sheet is getting smaller. That's not a problem. Oh, it should be a problem. So sorry about that. But if you look at it, the Antarctic sheet is getting bigger. So I don't know. That doesn't prove anything. Okay, last comment. My condolences to this planning commission and the city council for being legally bludgeoned to join the flock of fools that are supporting this endeavor, this measure. Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Donald Cross, Tascadero. Referring to the Excel spreadsheet, by altering the percentage rates in order to increase the metric tonnage, what's going to happen in the year 2020? Are we going to be audited and to make sure that we met those levels? That was one question. The other is, some of these are listed as being mandatory, others are listed as being voluntary. Are the ones that are listed mandatory, are they actually mandatory? Maybe you could answer.
Four. Now I'm questioning, since they're now going to use 2005 as their baseline, will that be accepted as being my part of the share? I went to the Templeton meeting on greenhouse gases in November, and they stated at that time that they had changed from 1990 requirements to 19, I think it was 1998. And we questioned that, and I says, well, do you have data on that? We know you don't have data for 1990. And they hemmed and hawed and refused to answer any questions that we asked. They always put it on the back burner. I think it's called a Delphi meeting. If you don't know what that is, you really need to look it up. So now I see they changed the information criteria to be 2005. I would question if they have any data on that. It's questionable if they do. Will they take into account the lost businesses that we no longer have in Atascadero since 2005? The other thing is, when they say that we have to do this, it's an extortion, because if we don't do it, they're going to withhold property to going to roads, funds for schools and things like that. It is pure extortion. So in closing, I would like to say that you look at the requirements of being in one of these toolboxes. I believe that the toolboxes are presented and developed by what started out as the United Nations Agenda 21. It's been renamed something like Sustainable Development, renamed Smart Growth, Urban Renewal. They have a dozen different names that they've changed it to because they don't want you to know where the idea came from. So anyway, get aware of sustainable development if you haven't already. Thank you very much.
Good evening, Chairman Ward. Commission, Michael Latner, Atascadero resident. My question has to do, perhaps it's for Mr. Frace, but also a suggestion for the Planning Commission. is as we go through these individual measures, I strongly concur with Chairman Ward's suggestion that we take the low-hanging fruit first, right? That you look for incentive programs that use market forces and incentives to get the behavior that you're looking for and to term economic development and see which of these measures might help us meet those goals as well. One, that's good economic sense, and also if we have good measures of how we're doing on these action items, it'll also help us get a sense of how well we're following our economic development plan. Third and final, my understanding is that the single biggest item in terms of emissions for the city is the methane production from the waste plant. And so I'm curious as to whether there's been more specific discussion of long-term plans that might help us tackle that big monster, which could be looked at as an opportunity. I mean, we have the technology, and we certainly should be looking at opportunities to bring in people and provide the jobs that could solve that big problem. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairman Ward and Commission members. My name is Ray Wyman, and I live in Atascadero. I'd like to make two general comments, and I have a specific suggestion about a mitigation measure. My first general comment is that I know that there are some in the audience and perhaps some of you on the commission who question the scientific rationale for AB 32, but that's okay. You don't have to support that and still be behind this measure. After all, every gallon of gas you save at the pump is that much less that needs to be imported from foreign countries, and everyone ought to be in favor of that. Every dollar you save at the pump, every dollar you save by using less electricity is that much more spending power that we can have to help our economy. The other general point is that whether this succeeds or fails, and I think it should be mostly voluntary, I agree with Chairman Ward about that, depends, I think, mostly on our elected and appointed leaders. That means you. If you get behind this, the public will get behind it and it will succeed. If you drag your feet, it will fail. My one specific suggestion goes to the transportation element. I live near the high school, and I see every school day enormous traffic jams where people bringing their kids to school are driving almost always with one child per car. Same is true with the junior high, to a lesser extent, and all the elementary schools. I would urge you to contact the school district and see if you can work with them to encourage a voluntary program.
Possible, no regulations to get there. So at the very least, to minimize any regulation and the cost to the residents of this city. I would also, and since we have a very unique tree canopy throughout the city limits, I am very interested in the process of how the credit is being determined to for that tree canopy, because we've probably got one of the bigger ones out of the whole San Luis County. So my concern is that we don't get the due credits for that, so I would encourage you to delve into that. And if I could know how, get the background on how it's calculated, I will work on it myself. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen of the commission, I have a couple of questions. What do we consider now as being greenhouse gases? You talk about CO2, and I'm really curious about what the state of California, what our requirements are as far as what is considered to be greenhouse gases. And then the second comment or question is, has anybody here or do we have somebody to monitor the CO2 content? Since they feel that's important, which actually CO2 is negligible as far as any reaction. I need CO2 out of my ranch, my barley, did the best in 1940, and look what the CO2 content was. The grass for our cattle, we need CO2. That's the only place we can get carbon. We're talking about attacking carbon, and it's important. We can't have photosynthesis without it. But I think it's real important. The last kit that I bought from Draeger, and it's there's all kinds of Draeger. You can get $6,000 instrument to check the CO2, or you can get a simple little kit, which I think the accuracy is just as good as any of the fancy meters, or with maybe a fraction of a percent. But a Draeger kit, the last one I bought, I think it was $36. What are we measuring? What for? And a few little simple things like that. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, I didn't get your name.
Ted Gilbert, Paso Robles.
Thank you.
Good evening, Jim Shannon, Atascadero. I have lots of questions. First of all, I mean, how do we get there? You know, I think Cali held up $400,000 between the six cities that are going to participate in that. That worked out to about $66,000 a city. My problem with all this is again, we got the Air Pollution Control District, which is a non-elected board district that's implementing this. I know it's a state mandate. You know, it's going to happen. We just have to pick out what's best for us. It's kind of discouraging, but that's the way we're going. What's happened, we fall asleep as voters. My thing is, how do we get there? Are we going to limit trips, just as with Select Minister Wayman, that we're going to, I mean, that was one of the questions I wrote down before he even spoke. Are we going to limit trips? Are we going to say, okay, we can only drive cars on this day, or are we going to make this many trips in the city this day? I mean, is that going to be mandated to us? Are we going to put gates at our east, west, north, and south entrances to our city to, okay, we can't have cars? I mean, what is it? I don't know. How's this going to be done? Are we going to mandate, the city going to mandate to the citizens and property owners about what they have to do to their houses, or encourage them to do things? Are they going to have restrictions on their property and all that stuff, that they have to do certain things before it's sold? I know that provision is in there, but it hasn't been officially part of this. I mean, how's it going to be audited? Who's going to do that? Is it going to be good 1 year, then not the next? Are we going to get fined as a city? I mean, there's so many variables here, and it's discouraging, you know, again, that it's overreaching government, as far as I'm concerned. I know I had a conversation with Mr. Lattner, and we have difference of opinions, you know, and I blame part of the academia world for that as well, because of their, I guess they think they know better than all of us, you know. It's frustrating that we've gotten to this point and fallen asleep at the wheel, so to speak. I know that as a city and as a commission, as a city council, they have to do this. This is mandated. You know, let's do what's best for our city, despite what we got going here. I mean, it's just there's so many things, that so many questions unanswered. I know that city council meeting last year, Mrs. DeCamp out of our back pockets as well, and again, it's just another level of bureaucracy that needs to be paid for, and that's going to be by us, unfortunately.
Thank you.
My name is Peter Byrne. I'm from Paso Robles. And I would encourage that you guys adopt as many voluntary measures as possible. And they're not really voluntary, because it's being forced on you by AB 32. And AB 32 is based on a false premise that global warming is man-made. We've had global warming for hundreds and hundreds of years before the industrial age was first started putting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. So it's been going on for a long time, and no matter how many measures you adopt, if we're going to have global warming, we're going to have it anyway. There's nothing you can do about it. So I would suggest that you just do as many voluntary measures as possible. And I don't really need any particular scientific evidence to back that assertion up, that global warming is not man-made. All you have to do is look at archaeological records of settlements that were established many years ago as farming settlements above the Arctic Circle. Subsequently, they were just abandoned due to the Little Ice Age. So you had dramatic climate change hundreds and hundreds of years ago before the Industrial Age. And there's just nothing you can do about it. It's been around for a long time. But anyway, since you have to do something, you know, I would suggest you adopt voluntary measures as much as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? We're going to have another opportunity as we get through some of the other issues, so don't feel you have to fire all your bullets right now.
Hey, Warren, why don't we get the next area?
Okay, so we'll turn it over to Callie, and we're going to start wading our way through these toolbox measures.
All right, here we go. So our first one is the energy section. So most of the measures fall under either energy or transportation, and then there's several at the end that are under various other categories. So first we'll go through all the energy ones. Our first one is energy efficiency outreach and incentive programs. So this has to deal with working with the San Luis Obispo County Energy Watch, working to promote energy efficiency, trying to get homeowners, renters, businesses to voluntarily choose to, can choose to do some of the actions or drop some of them. We don't have to do everything that's listed on the screen. So you can kind of give us your feedback as to which of these seem like they might work and which might not. One of the actions, like the second one on here, is to designate 1 week per year to conduct an energy efficiency outreach campaign targeting a specific group. So maybe going to a business and talking about, you know, how they can work with PG&E to install new lights that would be more energy efficient, that sort of thing. Let's see. So that's about it on that one. And the thoughts from the commission?
Well, I've got some ideas on this, but before I chime in, I'd like to hear from my other commissioners. So let's start down here.
I got a couple on this one.
Now, this is just on the right up there, number 4A.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, I wasn't really clear either on the funding. Is it, we have a portion of the $400,000, is that correct?
Now, the total funding is a grant for $400,000, and that is from APCD, from these different sources, to the consultant. So none of that money actually goes directly towards the city.
So if we're going to promote energy efficiency, that would just come out of city funds?
Yes.
Okay.
There are some grant opportunities, and then there's a lot that the city actually already does with the San Luis Obispo County Energy Watch. We've been meeting with them for several years, and they've actually helped the city install a ton of retrofit-type activities at the city to reduce our costs. So it would just be working with them more to do the outreach to businesses and homeowners.
And does the consultants or the toolbox list specific programs, like on the third bullet point there, specific programs that are in existence that the city can tap into?
This is the information that's shown in that toolbox and the different, that's all that we've received so far. I think that these are probably more like general overview policies, and then we would go back
so
later.
We'd have to do the legwork and see what's out there and then try to promote those within the city.
Many of these measures will require a substantial amount of staff time, and that has been one of our considerations going through this. How much staff time can we afford to devote to some of these things?
And would I assume that of these
and whether they've produced any measurable results?
I do not have that information. We would need to do, like if this was a measure that we were interested in, we would do that research to see, you know, how we could promote it. That would probably be more of an implementation strategy, though.
So these are in the realm of education, public relations, advertising. And
yes,
the problem with these types of things is it's very difficult to measure benefits. Even though you perceive that you're getting benefits, in order to justify undertaking these kind of programs, if you're trying to forecast benefits, it can be very difficult. So that's what occasioned my question, whether there's some source that we can use to find out what benefits we can expect to gain from this, and then try to put it up against the costs that the programs may involve.
I think that's actually what the spreadsheet does. So the consultant, APCD, they've made certain assumptions that if we did these three things, that on a city of 27,000 people, it's going to equate into X number of greenhouse gas reductions. And then we can tweak, you know, some of the variables about participation up or down a little bit to adjust that. But I think you're right that this is more just kind of an education outreach type measure. The main impact will be on staff time. If this is something you're interested in, then we'll go back and crunch those numbers. If you're not, then this is one we would kind of skip over and get to the next one. So I think, you know, these are good questions, and that is kind of what this process is about.
Well, it's hard not to be interested in this. I mean, it has the appeal that we've been talking about since Chairman Ward brought it up, of involving voluntary measures, voluntary activity on the part of the citizenry based upon considered decisions and choices and education. So it does seem very appealing, but again, there is that question, what benefits do you get from this type of program, or what can we expect?
And I think that you can give us all that feedback, and what we can do is plug the numbers in. And there's actually a calculating tool in the toolbox that will tell us how much staff time this measure will require. Most measures will take, they say, about 0.05 of staff time, so that's a few.
Or maybe some nonprofit organizations that would be glad to assist in educating people about these advertising or publicizing programs and measures that would help in this regard.
Okay.
Just following up here on the same thought, so it sounds like what we're looking at is, one, and when I read this first point, you know, it's difficult to specifically know what we're talking about. It's really general. If we adopt something like this, we're just saying that this would be a rather low impact thing to do, and that we're just trying to make people aware of things that they can do. But also, I think it's interesting that it seems that we're not going to really be talking about real numbers in terms of actual measurements. These are just assumed results from charts and formulas that we have.
That's correct, and that's kind of why you hear a lot that voluntary measures don't give you as much reduction potential as mandatory measures, because mandatory measures, they can calculate a certain percentage of people are guaranteed to participate. The voluntary ones are a little bit more flexible, and therefore we don't necessarily know that we're going to get as much impact from them, but they still can be very valid measures, and depending on how much we promote it and incentivize these things, we can still have a great participation.
Just keep it brief. Okay.
Is there I know there's going to be other voluntary measures, and is there any avenue to show greater results than maybe the assumed results are, and then get increased value from it?
Absolutely. When we plug the numbers into the toolbox, we can change the assumed percentages. So I think in the actual Excel sheet, they assume because of this measure, we might get, I think it was 5% of residential and commercial businesses participating. Mm. If we want to have a higher promotion, we think this is a great measure that we can kind of run with, we could assume a higher, maybe 10% of households participating by 2020. And then another thing to think about is that what we adopt with this, we will continue to monitor and change.
We show that we're serious about this and we're going to do a good job. I agree with my fellow commissioners. Very hard to quantify that, but I'm sure there's some formula. We'll be here weeks discussing these things unless we move forward, because there are some very, very meaty things that we can do based on the uniqueness of this city that will drastically reduce so-called greenhouse gases. So some of these things are trying to figure how many fairies can dance on the head of a pin, which philosophers years ago dealt with. And I'm not trying to minimize this, but there's some good things later on that really knock down greenhouse gases, and I'd like to sort of speed up the process. And I'm not trying to cut anybody off, but you know, we can be here weeks debating each little thing, but there's more good stuff to come. Okay, so that's
better than motherhood. Better than motherhood?
No, but I believe in motherhood.
I have the chair's permission to speak.
No, you go ahead. I'm not trying to
stifle you. I look at these three items, and it appears to me that those three items under this heading are just trying to educate the public. And the better education that the public receives, the better responses we're going to get to the questions. That there's hundreds of questions, thousands of questions that are going to come up as a result of this program. So I support those three items just because they are going to educate the public in a manner that we can't do individually. But also, once the public is educated and they let us know what their concerns are, then we have to come up with a follow-up program that will make sure that the auditing process will deliver the results that these ideas are supposed to generate. So, folks, I think we all have to look at it as an opportunity to become better educated so that we can make better decisions that will impact the greenhouse gas. It doesn't have to be everybody's
knowledge and experience in our community to solve our own problems. And when we bring in outsized groups, there's a tendency to have that one size fits all. So with the caveat that this could do no harm, but I think we should limit the exposure to developing the program internally.
Okay, so we have some direction to further explore this program, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I have one more question, and it relates to something that Chairman Ward brought up before, and that was the stillborn program of a few years ago that was intended to encourage people to have solar installations in their home. The plan, as you said, well, the law allowed for the costs of these solar installations to basically be recovered through, the governments were going to make it possible to finance putting in solar installations, and then they would get their money back by adding a charge on what amounted to the property tax bill. And then Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I guess, squawked. Does anybody know what the status of that issue is? I understood that there was some discussion of trying to reform the program or revive it in some way so that it would stick, because it did represent a significant incentive to try to put solar installations on private homes.
Yeah, it's my understanding the federal issues with loans on residential still hasn't been resolved. It could work, and does work, I guess, on some commercial parcels. But what we've found is, in the interim, a lot of these local solar installers have figured out creative financing programs. So we're seeing more solar installation on residential in the last year or so than we've ever seen before. We're averaging 3 to 4 installations a month right now. So it seems like this is something that the private sector actually took care of on its own without us putting together some government program. So this probably is an example of where the private sector was just able to deal with it itself.
Well, it's good to hear that that is anything about that possibility.
It's my understanding that once you start to try to cross property lines with energy generation, that it becomes a problem for PG&E, that there's a number of laws or rules that prevent that. So it's fine when you generate it for yourself on your property, but when it becomes a collaborative mini power company type operation, that it kind of runs afoul of what PG&E likes to see.
And the governments that are encouraging us to do these things might be able to offer PG&E some encouragement, though, to be a little more flexible. Have you heard anything about that possibility?
I don't know.
Because it seems to me, from a legal standpoint, it would be doable. You could basically come up with a canned program. You know, you'd set up a structure with contracts and everything for neighbors, where a group of neighbors could actually cooperate in this way, and it would seem like that would offer a lot of hope for increasing solar utilization.
Well, let us write that down, and we'll check in with the consultant and just see what kind of options are available for that.
That would be a brave new world that would maybe help us with this.
Okay. There's all sorts of creative things that we can come up with here, but I'd like to, again, caution you. Let's stick to the script, and then when we get to the end of the energy section, if anybody has any ideas, and, you know, that's a good idea, Commissioner Cullen, we know it could be part of the Lawyers Full Employment Act of the next century, but...
Well, that's
it's still a good idea. I'm not shooting it down.
You'd end up with canned packages, basically, you know. But it would offer, it would be a very interesting exercise to work on it as a lawyer, I have to say.
Well, as a chemical engineer, I can tell you there's all sorts of new technology coming down the pipeline that's going to make solar generation on rooftops look like thatch roofs on houses. 20, 30 years from now, but that's another discussion for another time. So,
back to the
Charlie, let's go to 4B.
All right. So our next one is energy audit and retrofit programs. About this one, it would be an optional measure again to educate the public about what an energy audit is and how they can retrofit their house to be more energy efficient. So an energy audit means that somebody comes in and they test the windows, the doors, the insulation, the heating system, all of those things to see where there's leaks in the house. And then they would give you a proposal as to what you could do to fix those things. There's actually a state program right now that allows some rebates if you go through this process and you do the upgrades. So this is a system, this measure includes a system of different actions that would help promote these energy audits and just make people aware of what opportunities are out there for them. And there's several measures, that actually goes on to two different slides, and it's 4B in your packets.
Could you define an energy audit? Because people hear that and they see the energy police knocking on their door at night, walking around with thermometers and taking names.
It is a very strange name. I don't know why they came up with calling it that. That's kind of just been accepted as what these are called. But it's basically somebody that comes in and they are trained kind of like a home inspector. But they come in with special equipment you see them like on television. They have their special cameras that show you the different colors of heat, like where the, say on a cold day, where the cold air is coming in through the cracks along the edge of your windows. Say like on doors, if you didn't have good thresholds on your doors, it would show a leak right there. And those are the type of things that they would be looking at. But it's much more highly skilled than that. And they usually run about the same as the cost of a home inspection. You're usually looking around $500, depending on the size of your home. To ask somebody to come in and do this audit of where the leaks are in your house.
And is this voluntary or mandatory?
This would be a voluntary measure.
Okay, fine.
Let's run down the list. Anybody got any thoughts on this?
I got real quick, Chuck, if you, I mean, I think this is kind of comes back to a lot of what we talked about with the first one. Staff time, perhaps, depending on what where we go with that, a lot of staff time, but I think like Glenn and some others have said, it comes back to some basic education of our citizenry. So that's it.
Okay. The whether it's Home Depot or some of the appliance companies, they all have programs, and they're supported by their suppliers, whether it's Westinghouse or General Electric for the newer level of low-energy appliances. And if this could encourage that sort of thing rather than have a government program, I think it would be more effective. And again, I would resist having any kind of energy audit on a mandatory basis, but it's good information to have for a homeowner. So if it could be on a voluntary basis, I think it would be constructive.
So that's the direction this include, as long as it's voluntary and educational only?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Unless the rest of the commissioners feel otherwise.
I agree.
Okay.
All right, 4C.
Let me just ask about the energy audits. Are they, what is it? Let's suppose I wanted to get an energy audit. How would I do it? Does it cost me anything, and how much?
Yes, you would, I wouldn't say necessarily look in the phone book because there's not that many of them, but we do have some certified home energy professionals here in the county. Cuesta College actually offers a program so that a lot more people are receiving the training to be able to do these things. It is a fairly new thing. It's only been out there a few years where they started really getting into this and realizing the potential for saving money mostly is why homeowners choose to do it. Is they if they have really high energy bills, they're looking for all those little holes for where they can save money. If they choose to complete the recommended actions that the energy auditor recommends, then they would save money on energy if they implemented them.
So are there situations where some of the people who do the retrofits actually offer the audit first and then they comp the price of the audit?
For about a year now. I'm not sure how many people have gotten into it, but getting the information out there would probably help.
I'd like to make a comment on that. I know you can get on the internet and Google energy audits, and you can get a plethora of information on what to look for and how to do it, and you can just look at things in your house. If you have a 15-year-old TV set, it's going to consume more power than the TV sets of today. And just simply, when you get ready to buy a new TV set, take a look at the energy consumption. You have energy consumption on hot water heaters, you have it on air conditioning units, you have it on all kinds of industry has provided a good example of to allow you to make the kind of decision that you really need to make in regards to energy audits. You can go to Edison, PG&E. They have programs that tell you all kinds of ways of saving money on energy used in your home. And you don't have to pay anybody for it. You just take it, read it, and then decide if you're going to do something about it.
We,
okay, 4C?
I think Chuck, some of the public would probably like to chime in on some of this stuff, but
Chuck,
I'd like
we have one
I know, okay. But I personally, and we'll forward, we'll ask Warren how you feel. We're never going to get through this if we keep opening it up every time we go down a paragraph for public comment. But I would propose that we have another opportunity for public comment after we get through the energy area and before we get into the transportation. So if you could hold your comment then, and yeah, you know, we'll go, I'm not trying to stifle, but
it's an update.
Maybe some answer will come up in the interim, but we would like your input. But
I did want to call your attention to a resolution passed last fall requiring energy audits on homes over, I think it's either 2,000 or 2,500 square foot. It's mandatory if you do a repair or remodel on anything over $10,000 cost. So that's already started, required, sure. Mandatory.
Well, I want to hear from you on this, but let's get through this and we can have a long list of questions. Okay. 4C.
All right. So next one is income qualified energy efficient weatherization programs. So this is working with CAPSLO or another organization like that that would help us identify income qualified people to help them basically do some of the things that were identified in something like an energy audit. So help them go in through the direct install program that PG&E has. So this is another voluntary education and promotion type program, and it's just specifically targeted to income qualified households.
Who is CAPSLO? Oh,
I'm trying to think of, is that you know, I can't tell you what the acronym stands for, but this would be similar to, recently we worked with a solar company here in town that was hired through a program similar to this. They went through and we worked with them to identify all of the deed-restricted homes in the city that have qualified, income-qualified homeowners that would be eligible for to have solar installed on their home. That was a similar program that the city has already participated in. This is something that would be talking about more weatherization through a PG&E direct install program. So it's just identifying households.
It's the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, and committed to eliminating poverty by empowering individuals and families to achieve economic self-sufficiency and self-determination through a comprehensive array of community-based programs, and it reaches into energy. I'm not quite sure how, but anyway, that's from its website.
So this is the kind of program where if these, say if they were working on a project and they came to the city and asked for staff help, we would offer our services to help them, you know, identify people that we have deed restrictions on their homes. We give them a list of homeowners. It's a very small amount of staff time that will help them achieve their goals.
Ken, one of my concerns on this is that we keep looking at outside groups to come in and tell us how we should do this. All you got to do is walk down to Home Depot and tell them you want them to come out and check out your house for energy efficient heaters, air conditioners, or what have you. But I don't know whether I'm the only person on the commission that feels we should just keep this in our community and not farm it out. So is there anybody that feels different?
Yes, I feel differently. I think we should, of course, take our responsibility as a community and use our community resources to the maximum, and we should try to tailor this program as much as possible to the characteristics of our community. But there are many organizations that we can get benefits from at minimal cost, if any cost. There are a lot of nonprofits. There are private enterprises that want to that are in these activities, in these areas, and we're not going to be able to delegate to them our job, nor can we give them control over what we're doing, but we can use them in a way they want to be used. And they are a lot of these organizations, they want to, if it's a business, sell something to people who are trying to reduce their energy costs. And in the case of nonprofits, they want to do good in their minds by enabling people to reduce their energy costs. And I don't see any reason why we shouldn't try to exploit those opportunities to the maximum. Again, we don't have to surrender control. We shouldn't. And we need to do it with our community's benefit in mind and our community's special qualities.
Look, we're talking about a weatherization program. I mean, we're not talking nuclear science here.
No, but apparently CAPSLO, I don't know exactly what it means, income qualified weatherization program. It sounds from what I read here and their website as though they're trying to help families, individuals who are struggling economically in various ways, and one of them may be to find out if they're qualified for some kind of special weatherization program. I don't know exactly what this refers to, sure. But that's what my imagination suggests to me. And they're do-gooding. They're not. I don't see how they're a threat to us in any way. If they have a program like this and they're trying to help people who don't have a lot of money in our community qualify for some weatherization program, whatever exactly that might be, and it also dovetails with our goals to reduce our emissions, well, I don't know. It seems like a win all around. Win, 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 about four times, I would say.
Well, all right. Warren, why don't you just put a question mark next to that and just say we're concerned about outside groups, but we're not opposed to them if they're well qualified.
Okay. So move on to 4D.
Yeah. Is that, Commissioner Calamarino, will that kind of do it?
Well, yeah. I mean, hopefully they would work for us. And okay. You know, we're not going to work for them.
Okay. See, okay, think, 4D.
You know, saving staff time and stuff, too. It sounds like they're on. Mm-hmm. They got, you know, they got boots on the ground, so to speak,
all right,
doing it. You know, sure. We can give them a list of names. I think that's what we're looking at.
All right, so 4D is Energy Conservation Ordinance. This is one that could have a high reduction potential. It's an ordinance. It would make things mandatory. Recently, the County of San Luis Obispo went through and did a green building ordinance. This would be something kind of similar to that, would be focused on energy conservation. So, like when somebody's building a new house, there would be certain standards that they'd have to meet that the ordinance would specify. So we would actually go through and develop an ordinance. This is something that would take a lot of time and effort to implement and to enforce. It's one of the more mandatory measures.
A question.
Let's go to. I think everybody should chime in on this one because this is going to involve a lot of staff time. And let's.
There's a lot with this one. The ordinances are going to make it. The mandatory portion of it is going to affect a lot of people. Anything that you're going to build, the energy requirements from the state already continue to increase each year. I see a lot of difficulty with this one. Increasing the increases and adding to that, I would probably need more information on exactly where this is, would be going and to what would be targeted. But I see that. I mean, this is a difficult one. I'm going to pass this on to the next year.
Okay, my reading of this description of this measure require, through a new city ordinance, cost-effective energy efficiency upgrades. I philosophically am quite opposed to requiring the citizenry to do any of these things.
Yes, question on clarification. Does this only impact the commercial businesses and leaves residential out of it, or am I wrong?
It would depend on how we write the ordinance. So we could write it to, this is a future goal that if we decide we want this, it would be a future project to write the ordinance. So at that time, we would decide what the specifics were. But these are mandates. So this is something that we would be requiring above and beyond the existing building code in addition to.
I agree with the prior two commissioners' comments. I'm concerned with making it mandatory.
Yeah, that word mandatory doesn't go over too well here. I mean, already we're, you know, in the building industry, they're continually hit with new mandatory things that they have to put in. So I find it interesting because in an unrelated topic, we're always talking about affordable housing, but what we continue to do is like heap things that become mandatory that increase the price per square foot in building to levels that, you know, nobody can afford. So we're just heading off a cliff in that regard. Yeah. So anything that we can do to get around this is certainly what we need to do.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, I would say this is a last resort situation. I mean, we're not there yet. Hopefully we'll never get there. It's Plan B, Plan C, D, whatever, but it's I don't think we're there yet. I mean, if we get to a situation where we are not, we're clearly not going to meet our goals, and we are facing some significant sanctions for not meeting our goals, then I think is the time, and I think we have ample time before that, to consider such a thing. In the meantime, it seems to me the most that the staff should do is gather information about the ordinances that other jurisdictions may be using. And that shouldn't involve much work, I wouldn't think. There you probably have publications that describe these things as they come out. It may be that some jurisdictions are making one thing mandatory or another. And again, we're not at that point. But if you have the information on hand in a file, or you know where to get it, if and when the time comes to reach this last resort, then you can do it more efficiently. But I don't think you should spend much more time on it at this point.
Chris?
I agree. I think it's unanimous. My wife and I have 7 kids in the house. We go through a lot of hot water and a lot of milk, and some of them can't reach the light switches. So, I wrote a big no in the margin there to the ordinance. I think it's a last resort. I feel like the calculations that this being one of the big ticket items, it's kind of like that carrot being dangled in front of us, you know, a little bit. It would make a lot of headway towards our goal, but I think it's not what's right for us.
Good. Why don't we just move forward and put a big no next to that, and I would I'd discourage spending any staff time on doing any elaborate study on this. Just think of this new skating rink up here. They'd have to rip that damn thing down. And old people like to keep their homes warmer. Families with a lot of kids use a lot of hot water in the shower. Very, very difficult to have a one size fits all. So I think it would. I think we have many, many ways that we can reach our goal without doing this. Okay, let's go to 4E.
All right, so 4E is incentives for exceeding Title 24 and building energy efficiency standards. So Title 24 is the state energy code. It's already pretty strict, and it continues to become stricter every couple of years when we adopt a new code. What this identifies is for those people that that would like to make their buildings even more energy efficient than Title 24 requires, we would offer incentives like expedited permits, reduced fees, public recognition, or other incentive-based things to encourage people to go above and beyond. It would also include launching an educational campaign for builders, permit applicants, and the general public to promote best practices. So it's another incentive program, but it's one where we already have a lot of regulations with Title 24, so it's not going to, you know, make a huge impact on top of what we already have.
I have a question. How much leeway does the city have to offer incentives for developers that want to come in and put up a building and they're willing to spend some extra money to make it very energy efficient, and they come and they say, we'd like you to knock down some of the development fees. Is that, I mean, you and I have talked about some of that stuff, but is that a realistic program?
Well, I think with the city's existing financial conditions, it's not realistic that we would be reducing fees very much for these sorts of things. A lot of these things in terms of expediting the process, that sort of thing, we're already doing. We're trying to move things as fast as possible. We don't have that much room in our fee structure for the council to reduce it significantly. So I think a lot of these things just, you know, wouldn't have that much effect even if we had them. Like Callie said, the way the new energy code is going to be written and adopted in basically 11 months is going to ratchet up to the point where there's not going to be much room to go beyond it, even if you wanted to.
My comment, please.
Yeah.
How about where the city provides incentives, but it's not a mandatory program other than what's in current existence? And if the developer wants to try to get some of those incentives, that they will get a reward for doing a better job of doing it. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a voluntary program.
But the incentive is to knock down fees.
So maybe they don't knock down fees, but they give a permit within 24 hours of receiving the application.
Well, they should do that anyway.
I think a good incentive for doing anything to increase energy savings is going to be to offset that with the cost of what you're having to do to accomplish that. If the fees are able to be lowered in a manner to offset some, if not all, there's the carrot. If that's not going to be possible, then like you've already stated, the energy standards right now are getting stricter and stricter every year. And how much more can you put into your house? It's already the cost of building is just rising every year, and the energy savings concepts is driving some of that.
Okay.
Sure.
Yes, Len?
Yeah, I like the idea, but I think my understanding is the same as Director Fraser's, that we're basically doing everything we can right now to streamline permits, to keep fees down. So I don't think we have much to give area for energy reduction. However, if there is something like a little blue ribbon or, I don't know, some kind of award, I'm not sure what it is.
Green ribbon, gold star.
Yeah, green ribbon, yeah. But maybe there are some creative ideas that can be used, but it looks like when it comes to fees and permits, we don't have much more to give.
Yeah.
I got a couple things, Chuck, real quick. Yeah, I agree. I think we are doing a lot of good things, especially with the design review committee and streamlining the process. You know, public recognition could be easy enough as, you know, recognition in the newspaper for the green builder of the month or the green business of the month, yeah. You know, and give them a little press. I think that's easy to do. I think it's something that's doable. I would say yes to those things, including, you know, educational type things, like we said. I got a question. When the Title 24 programs becomes more strict and more strict, are we going to get credits for those within our 2020 date?
I believe we've already gotten credit for it. Okay. So when they when they calculate the reductions already implemented from state measures, that's one of them.
So it sounds like this is a not include, right?
Pardon me?
We're not going to include this measure, just to summarize?
Well can we include portions, correct?
Do you want to just include the
we can continue
publicity piece?
Publicize them, okay. Whether on the website or the newspaper. Continue what we're doing with the DRC to streamline process in regards to building permits and or projects. I agree, you know, there's not a lot of wiggle room with the fees, and we need those anyway.
I think just because it's not going to be extremely effective, I don't think we should axe it because of that. I think it has its merits. I don't think we should ignore it. Voluntary programs with incentives, I think, are good, and I think there is some value to this. We might just have to look a little farther into what the incentives are going to be and how that will entice people to do more than what they're required of.
You could tie it in with A and educate the 4A and the education and outreach. Mm-hmm. You could actually fold it all together. As Commissioner Cooper was suggesting, you could do a program, you know, the builder of the month, builder of the year, measured by this, you know, I don't know what you'd call them, green builder, whatever you want to call them. But to give them some recognition for their achievement, encouragement, and at the same time fulfill an educational objective, seems like it could work.
Okay, I think we got that one.
Yeah, we don't want to have this a building-killing program. It shouldn't be. So.
Okay, 4F?
4F.
Energy-efficient public realm lighting requirements. So it says, develop and adopt an ordinance that requires new development to utilize high-efficiency lights in parking lots, streets, and other public areas. So it's a very specific mandate. It would be on a new building that puts in new lights.
Mr. Chairman, I have an idea that I would like to present on this item that might interest the rest of the commission members as well as the audience. I don't like the idea of an ordinance, but let me tell you something. There's 482 cities in the state of California, 80 counties, and every one of them have street lights. Here's a program just recently adopted by the city of Redlands, California. What they did was they changed their high-pressure sodium light bulbs, which they have traditionally used, to more efficient light-emitting diode, LED bulbs. When they do that, 482 cities, 80 counties, when they do that, that bulb lasts twice as long as a high-pressure sodium. It reduces their maintenance cost, and they recover the full cost through savings in their own program. Now that, I think, is something that every city and every county in this state would be interested in doing. So there's a program that's not in this program, but I'd like to see it in there.
Yes, Len?
Picking up on that, I think, as I understand what Commissioner Bentz is talking about, he's talking about something for the city to do, and it might make economic sense to do it, because I read an article just I don't know, a week or two ago in the New York Times, a very detailed article about these LED lights and how the market now is really driving their use. Commercial enterprises have been apparently using them more and more, and now residential customers are also picking up on it. And it even made me think about doing something along these lines, and I've been pretty lazy about it. But the reason I didn't think about it before is I have halogen lighting, in a lot of halogen lighting in my house, and I didn't realize now that LED offers alternatives to that. Apparently, there are LED light bulbs that will replace any kind of incandescent bulb that you've been using. And from, as Commissioner Bentz was suggesting, because of the long life of these lights and the reduced energy cost associated with them, you get back your money fairly quickly. They do cost more initially, but it pays. And I think, I hope that these market forces are going to address this sufficiently that we don't need to compel something like the use of these lights. Do you have any knowledge about this yourselves?
I can tell you that the consumption, electricity consumption, is reduced by 50%. 50%. I worked in a city that was paying $1 million a month in electricity charges. 50%. $500,000. One city.
And they're not hot to the touch? They're less of a fire risk?
Less maintenance costs. They recover their cost, 100% of the cost, in a very short period of time.
I think we're starting to see, and this is with the private sector, but we're starting to see in some of the gas stations and parking lots that we're seeing retrofits and the LEDs going in. So I think this would be an ordinance that we would say that if you did a commercial center, you could only use LED lights in the parking lot, that sort of thing. So that's the question. Obviously, the technology's there now, and it's starting to be accepted. So this would be one that probably relatively painless to adopt, but it would be an ordinance.
May I ask, do you think that the developers would consider that a burdensome requirement? Or would it sounds like it might be advantageous to them. How would they perceive it?
Well, I've seen a lot of the gas stations have already done these retrofits. I know Walmart actually wanted to make sure they had the option to use LEDs in their parking lot because they're assuming that's what they're going to be using in a year or two.
I have a question. We already talked about Title 24 building energy efficiency standards. Is mandatory LED use coming down the pike with that anyway?
I think there's a whole lot of bulb or lighting efficiency requirements, and there already are efficiency requirements for parking lots, but they don't require the type of fixture you use. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this next cycle, we won't see it till this summer, whether that would be in that. But there's already something in Title 24 about exterior lighting, and those are the kind of things they continue to ratchet up. So it may be something that we're going to see in the state code anyways. Mm-hmm.
Just to chime in on that, I recently talked to the head of a lighting company that manufactures these lights, and quote, they offer some LED lights, but they say the technology is not there yet, so they're totally comfortable with it. And there's a lot of buzz about it, but there's also some downfalls this is the area of expertise of a city engineer, and we're not lighting experts, and so I think, you know,
I think you could refer this to us for further study. So if you guys think this might be good, you want us to check in with the city engineer on this, get his opinion, and we could do that. And then, like we said, we're probably bringing this back to you. This is one we could report back, and then you can make the decision then.
Okay.
And a particular issue that I would be interested in learning about is whether other communities in our area have such ordinances, and if we adopted one, would it be perceived by developers as a discouraging factor in their assessment of whether to do anything in Atascadero? Would we in any way disadvantage ourselves in trying to recruit businesses to Atascadero by having this kind of an ordinance?
One comment. This isn't mandating something like this isn't going to buy us a whole lot of points on the metric tonnage. If you look at the paperwork, it gets us four metric tons. So 4 points. This doesn't seem like very much of a gain to me.
Well, is that true for requiring developments?
Yeah, it's depending on how many new parking lot lights we expect to be installed. So we could take a look at the assumptions that are in there and bring it back to you at the next meeting with what we would assume. But it's probably not going to be a huge
question. A huge is that difference. Just parking lights and not all lights?
It also talks about new developments, so new lights. We don't have a lot of street lights in Atascadero, so it's we're not going to see a huge difference in that. You're mostly going to see parking lots, maybe parks or other public areas.
This Atascadero could just look at their utility bill that they get, and they could compute a 50% reduction in it, wow. And then whether they can determine whether they want to pursue that or not. That's the only reason I bring it up, is that these are ideas that can be broadcast in an information packet that allows other people to make decisions that maybe we won't make.
But it sounds like our biggest advantage is a cost savings and not so much a reduction in CO2. Yeah. So, I mean, cost savings is, I mean, and I don't want to throw that away, but as far as the CO2 savings, or
yeah,
it's negligible, yeah.
Perhaps we can have, like Warren said, look at it a little closely, because even city lighting comes back to us later on in this energy efficient. Yeah. It's 4K, I believe. You know, so the city lights versus park lights versus new developments are totally separate issues. So if we can maybe have, I agree with what Ken though said. We don't want to paint an unfriendly environment, and especially if it's going to be such a negligible gain in metric tonnage. So.
All right. Well, how do we want to handle this then? It's not going to drop a lot of CO2, and when you look at some of these light bulbs, you know, if you got to replace a street light and an LED light cost $150 versus the $15 light that's in there, doesn't make a lot of sense. But
that's later.
But this ordinance is just for new development. It's not requiring an existing business to change their lights out, correct?
That's correct. It's only
so
new.
I honestly don't have a problem with that. I think if a new, you know, whenever you buy a new car or build a new house, a lot of times you spend a little extra money for something that you wouldn't ordinarily replace in the first place, but you're just happy to do it because of the long-term effects that you might have on it. So I think in this case, you know, for the Walmart or another big project that's going to come in, I don't see a problem with requiring this types of high efficiency lights. And it doesn't necessarily say LED lights. I know there's some concern about the technology with the type of lights for that, but make it require high efficiency. I don't know if the cost is that much more, but I'm in favor of this particular of 4F here. I don't see a problem with it.
We can provide some additional analysis if you want and bring it back to you at the next meeting with the specifics.
Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest that let the forces of the free market deal with this. If I'm building a new store and I want to be smart and not have astronomical energy bills in the future, I'm probably going to require on my own, no one's telling me to do this, that that my builder or my architect or whoever is doing this puts in the most energy efficient lighting possible. And again, making people do these things, making developers, you know, requiring them to do certain things, I think is taking away the fact that, you know, people are going to make smart decisions if they are given, you know, the option. I mean, I know I would. I think everybody in this room would make those decisions. We've probably done that in our own homes already.
Yeah, I think we're getting stuck on something that has very little impact on the CO2 thing. So I think we're getting in an area where this is up to the city, and I don't think it has any role, significant role in CO2 reduction. So why don't we go on to the next one?
The next one is small solar photovoltaic incentive program. This is actually a measure that does have very high reduction potential, especially for us in Atascadero. I think probably more than many of the other cities in our county in Atascadero, solar photovoltaics make a lot of sense. We have a lot of sunshine. We use a lot of energy in our homes. People are installing these systems on their own to save them money. So, and they're doing their own financing and working with installers to do that. So what this measure is just the city helping to expand education and promotion on incentives, rebates, financing programs, and other opportunities for photovoltaic systems and solar hot water heaters. So there's many different actions that are included in here. Some of them include reviewing our permit system, the approval process, fees, and that sort of thing. So that's something that the city is already doing. We're going through all of our permit processes and making sure that they're as streamlined as possible. And we actually already have the lowest fees in the county as far as permit fees on photovoltaic systems.
I liked this proposal, especially hearing your report there, Callie. I think we continue to look at ways we can streamline this process and would encourage these people. And again, it kind of comes back to a lot of these things we've already discussed, like the existing programs that might be out there. Yeah, it would be some staff time to do that, but it seemed like a positive program to me.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think as we discussed before, incentivizing solar is a very attractive thing. And when there was that period that the state law was in effect that allowed provided municipal financing for solar installations, cities as disparate as Berkeley and Rancho Santa Fe jumped right on it and started doing it. And they found that it was very well received in two very different kinds of communities because the residents were anxious to do solar and they just didn't have enough money on their own to pay for the installation. So the incentives have been shown to work. Those particular one, that particular law was unfortunately it basically made invalidated as a practical matter. But the other thing we talked about was if residents could work together and put together solar fields in neighborhoods, that would be the next step in the process. But all of this seems like an area of great promise.
Any more input here?
Well, I like it because it doesn't have the dreaded ordinance word in it. So,
I like it.
Would we only get credit for new installations from this date forward, or You mentioned that we have been seeing a great increase.
Yeah,
recently.
I can check with the consultant, make sure that she's really included how many systems we have been installing. It's really just been in the last year that we've seen this big uptick. And I don't know if it's the rebates that are out there, but we've definitely seen an increase.
I think it's a great program.
I don't, but for two reasons. 5-10 years from now, there's going to be different technology. Fuel cell technology, where natural gas is going to go into a black box and electricity is going to come out the other side. The whole solar water heater thing is a joke, and I think that should be scratched out of anything. If somebody wants to put solar panels on their roof, there's all sorts of incentives, and those incentives can change in a New York minute. When everybody sees their electric bill going up, and they look at the guy next door, and they say, hey, my bill went up to pay for his darn solar panels, I think there's going to be some realignment in some of these very, very favorable rates. And I'm not sure the whole solar panel thing can rest on just the market itself without excessive subsidies. So I personally think that there's enough incentive, there's enough people that believe in this, and they'll put it on their home without any great programs. But I do think we should streamline the process so that it's easier. But please scratch out solar hot water heaters. You may want to check that out, but I don't think the city would want to endorse that kind of program. But, 4-H.
All right, so this one's similar to the weatherization program that we talked about before. So this is income-qualified solar PV program. This is actually something that we've already been doing for the last year or two. It says collaborate with Grid Alternatives and other community organizations to provide targeted education and outreach to developer and homeowners. So this is be kind of similar to actually what they're doing right now down at People's Self-Help Housing. They're going to be working this company, Grid Alternatives, is working with housing development that's going in. They're going to be working to install solar on those income-qualified homes. This would be continuing programs like that.
Well, this sounds like a program that would work in Berkeley and Santa Cruz. I'm not sure it would work here.
The one that I mentioned before was Berkeley and Rancho Santa Fe. Rancho Santa Fe, quite different from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, there's a lot of money down there.
All right.
But, I'm just one guy on this panel, so I have ideas based on my own technical background and experience. But, again, I think the solar program should be a volunteer one, and I think the city should speed up the process for permits. And I think we should not encourage solar farms or get in the business of generating electricity for neighborhoods.
My comment on this one is, again, I guess similar to the other one, just to see that we're getting credits for what you're already doing, what the city is already doing in projects in progress. It seems very similar to the weatherizing one to me. Again, organizations, whether you support or resist or outsized organizations coming in, but to help these families save some energy. I'm sure there's incentive programs like you alluded to that are driving a lot of the solar installations. I'd probably be the only way that I would consider doing it, honestly. So I wouldn't be against 4-H myself.
I agree.
All right. Well, whatever the consensus is, I'm not sure. Do we have one on this one?
I'm for it.
I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Warren, you were talking about we do thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Anyway, okay. Okay.
Did you want to scratch solar water heaters?
There's water heaters on that one.
You want to take a shower on a cloudy day? Go ahead, put one in. Okay, 4I.
All right, next one is called Community Choice Aggregation Program. This is one that has high reduction potential, but it's a fairly unusual measure. So I'm going to read it here off the screen. It says, participate in and consider the results of a renewable energy secure communities project for San Luis Obispo, a regional partnership working to identify the best mix of resources for clean, secure, and affordable energy. So it's to develop a program and purchase portfolio comprised of cleaner generation sources by 2020. So it's it would actually be the city working to identify where our energy is coming from. It is very intensive, staff-intensive project to implement, and it's not something that we've really seen done before. We don't have a whole lot of examples of it, but we know larger cities are doing this sort of thing.
The consultant, we did quiz them about this. They said this is not realistic for a city of this size, so this is probably not one to spend too much time on.
This okay, is energy generation?
It's like you set up your own power company. You don't generate energy, but you buy and trade it. It's very technical.
Okay.
And you're targeting buying really clean energy, right?
Specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would take the whole
different electrons coming in. Then.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, considering that it's not really fit to Tascadero, I would definitely be thumbs down.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, so municipal energy efficiency retrofits and upgrades. So this is the municipal side of things. We're talking city operations on this one. Complete energy audits and benchmarking of all municipal facilities, leveraging existing programs such as PG&E's benchmarking and Energy Star challenge programs. Maintain regular maintenance schedule for heating and cooling, ventilation, and other building functions. So this is one that I'd say we're probably already doing. Our staff has been focused on this for at least the last 4 or 5 years, really as a way to save money. As things got tough for the city, we looked for every way that we could pinch a penny, and our building staff has actually taken courses as to how they can better manage the building systems, control the thermostats, and they've actually shown over the last 3 years that we've continued to lower our energy in the city. So every year we're using less and less energy, and it's costing us less. So this is overall a pretty positive program for the city.
Yes.
Are you using LED lighting?
We did do one of these kind of direct install programs where PG&E and I think it was the Energy Watch came through and they replaced lights in almost all of our city buildings. So, yes, there's been a lot of new things installed. We have a lot of very old buildings, and it's really helped to go through and replace very old equipment.
So that's both indoors and out?
Yes. Yeah.
And the revived City Hall, will there be LED lighting and all these energy efficiencies there?
It does have a high efficiency energy system. I don't believe most of the interior lighting is LED, although there will be an exterior lighting system on the exterior that will be an LED system.
Ah, God.
Did you have something you wanted to add, Chuck?
Well, they say for every mental process, there's some physical one, and you just heard mine. again, it's these big, huge programs, one size fits all, and I don't think we need it. I think some of these energy retrofits speak for themselves. If the market's there, builders will put them in. Some of the LED lighting, I mean, you know, it's not a very natural light. And if you had LED lights in here, everybody would look purple. Or
it'd be an improvement.
Cool.
Maybe that's not too bad. But the city should get involved in programs like that.
Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, but if we're already doing it, let's get the points for it.
Huh?
If we're already doing these things, as Callie indicates, we're doing primarily these things, then let's take the credit for it.
We're doing them because they make sense economically.
I understand, but we have this is going to give us 59 points. Better.
And if we weren't doing them, I would be sitting here telling you to do them.
Okay, well, just leave me out of this one, then.
I have a question, Chuck. About the first item here, adopt a municipal energy target. Is that necessary? Does that gain us any additional points to have a target? Can we adopt a target we know we're going to hit? The bullseye on, or what?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be something that would be a later discussion as to what kind of target we want to set for ourselves. So far, we've completed everything through grants and outside funding. We haven't put any city money into this sort of thing. And besides staff time, we've had some really dedicated staff members that are on top of obtaining these. But yeah, that would be part of it, is to set a future goal to continue making reductions.
Looks like there's no way to lose with this.
I agree.
Are you going to have a, for all municipal buildings, a energy maintenance schedule? Or are you going to basically say if it breaks down, we're going to fix it?
I think that's a choice we could make, but our Public Works Department already has, I think, fairly detailed maintenance programs for most of the buildings.
Well, if it's already in effect, then what are we arguing about?
We aren't arguing.
It's a well-managed
business.
I'm
the only one arguing. Okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay, next one's where we get into public realm.
For themselves.
See, it's not just replacing the lighting, it's the whole equipment, so you have most of the lighting being directed downward rather than scattered. So that's a very expensive retrofit. The lighting companies are coming up with programs and equipment that meet both these criteria. So it's not just like replacing a light bulb, it's a little more expensive than that. But
I think Commissioner Bentz made the case for this before, and then he just added the additional argument, which I think is also pretty compelling, that, you know, if we're going to be trying to educate, we're going to be trying to incentivize, we're going to be trying to encourage and, most of all, lead, we ought to be doing it ourselves. We start with number one here. And then ask for others to follow. And it also seems to make good business sense from what we've heard.
Well, Colony Square, don't the all those new streetlights in Colony Square meet the current requirements, Warren?
Well, they meet the current Title 24 requirements, but I don't think they would necessarily be considered these high efficiency lights that we're talking about now.
Okay.
Now, we did on the bridge on El Camino Real, when we built that new decorative bridge over Atascadero Creek. Right. Those fixtures on the bridge abutments are LED. So if you kind of look at those round globes, you'll see it's kind of a vertical array of lights. But that would be an example of the type of lighting we'd be looking at in the future.
Okay.
What it sounds like to me is that we're sort of discussing a cost-benefit issue. So I don't even know whether if this rate's high in terms of credits or...
Seven.
So I guess maybe.
No, seven, yeah.
So maybe the issue is basically to figure out that, you know.
What percentage of our public realm electricity use, or overall electricity use, is these lightings that we're talking about? You mentioned that there's not relatively too many streetlights in Atascadero comparatively. Well, I would be in support of this, especially with the wordage that says identify and secure funding to replace these lights to high efficiency lighting.
I agree.
Yeah, if there's grant monies, if it's not going to cost the city, then do it. I mean, there's going to be some benefit beyond that. So,
I'm thumbs up on this, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, considering what's been said, I think that I'm okay, too.
So before the night's over, maybe we're going to get to actually have a thumb, showing of thumbs.
All right, thumbs up. Okay, on to the next one, 4L.
Okay, so here we have energy efficiency requirements for new municipal buildings. So if we're going to build a new city building, we would review existing municipal building policies and standards and adopt a policy to exceed Title 24 building efficiency standards by a certain percent. So the actions seem fairly limited on this one. I think overall, the idea of just looking at, you know, our municipal energy use when we're doing a new building, that's something that we would already be doing when we built the community center. That was a main thing that they considered when they were building. That was how energy efficient that building was going to be. It's always a consideration for the city. This is just getting a little bit more specific to that.
Mr. Chairman? I have a comment.
Yes.
I would suggest that you enter in there, adopt a policy to meet or exceed.
You're already required to meet Title 24 energy standards, so exceeding
that's true,
it.
Yeah.
But I think this is another example of leading the community. Do by example. Show, you know, if we do it, others hopefully will.
Okay. In the event that we build a new city building in the next 7 years.
I have a question. A lot of money has been spent on the inside of the Rotunda building to create a certain ambiance, and the lighting and the painting is all part. But
the lighting right here.
I've never been in a bowling alley in Las Vegas, so
don't
call me on that. But there's a certain artistic use of lighting. And the LED lights don't lend themselves to that. I mean, they're more institutional. So I just mention it. I'd hate to see somebody come in and start ripping all the lights out of the Rotunda building because they're not LED.
There's nothing in this policy that is suggesting that all lighting will be LED.
Okay.
Nor
it's
will there be
an
LED inside.
We're asking them to search when they're looking at lighting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in support of this action.
Everybody seems to be focused on lighting. This just says energy efficiency, which, I mean, we're talking equipment. There's lots of ways to be energy efficient.
Windows.
Lighting is just a part of it. So I think this is a good measure.
Okay, you're the architect, right?
Okay.
There you go. All right.
Hey.
So we have support on that one, I think?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So 4M.
All right, this is the last one in the energy section. So this is doing renewable energy systems on city property. So install solar or other renewable energy projects at select city facilities. Identify funding sources and opportunities. And replace inefficient hot water heaters with those powered by solar energy. So I'd say besides the last point on that, the first two are actually things that the city has started to consider with the wastewater treatment plant. Because it uses so much energy and because there's so much land out there, this has been a real possibility that the city's been kicking around. We don't know what kind of long-term commitment that we have to it right now. It could be very expensive if we don't find all those grant opportunities, but it's definitely a real possibility.
I would hate to see ugly solar reflectors draped all over that wonderful tile on the roof of the Rotunda building just to make some statement. And I'm afraid if we
help finance the installation, the acquisition and installation of that kind of equipment.
If doing something like the wastewater treatment plant would give us a lot of credit, perhaps?
And, yeah, I mean, it would. You could really, you know, publicize that. It would go back to 4A again, too, with the outreach and the public relations and advertising. And, again, we would be shown as leaders in something that we're trying to get people to follow in.
It also says install solar or other renewable energy. So it's not just limited to solar. It's any renewable energy. And the wastewater treatment plant, they could get an analysis done on all their pumps and motors and reduce their electricity costs because every city has done that. I was in cities for 38 years, and we did all that kind of stuff as a normal process. And that's what we're talking about, is trying to enforce a normal process that guarantees that we are considering the latest state of the art whenever there's a need to do something, okay. and it's the best use of the funds that we have available. So I'm for it. Thumbs up.
Well, many, many wastewater treatment facilities capture methane and on site have boilers that generate their own electricity.
Right, I think you can harness
that. They do that
methane
up in the Bay Area.
Right.
I know that, so that technology is available.
Certainly a renewable resource.
All right, well, I guess it's agreed, but please resist the urge to drape solar panels over the Rotunda building, okay?
I think anybody would vote for that.
As a historic building, don't worry. We can't do that. It won't happen.
We'll put up wind turbines in the back.
Now, before we get into the transportation, one gentleman wanted to make some comments on the energy thing, so now's your chance. And thank you for sticking with us.
Hi, Ed Veek. I still live in Atascadero. Everything that you've brought up here on the list, if it's energy efficient and it's cost effective, is something that should and could be done. Now, the only thing is the audit. And I asked the question, who's going to do the audit? And they said, well, they had a class in Cal Poly that was graduating in December in order to do those audits. So they were already geared up for it. They were going to pass it. Anyway, the energy audit was to be required. It would stay on the books for 4 years. Didn't have to repair or do anything, but it would stay on the books. So if a realtor come along and went to sell the house, they said, oh, and it failed the energy audit. So I didn't like that idea, but anyway, it's already in the works. So call your attention to that, because the next time that they do it, they're going to change it to the 1,500-square-foot house. And then they'll have the, well, it's not on the books. It's you have to fix it. And it's just going to go on and on and on. Item number 4I, I ask the question, what is a regional partnership? Is that something that we get into and we have to do it and we have to follow their rules? Be careful with those. They're kind of dangerous sometimes. When I did a remodel on my house on Santa Lucia, I was required to install fluorescent fixtures in the bathrooms and in the kitchen. Now, the fixtures that I installed have failed multiple times, and they were very expensive to replace all the fixtures. LEDs are not in production yet that handle a 100-watt bulb economically yet, so you want to be careful in there. I do energy-efficient things on my house, and I do them myself, and I can't afford to hire a contractor at $80 an hour to install sponge rubber around my outlets and put in thresholds. If you want people to do that, try to limit so it's not required by the contractor. If a person can say, well, hey, I installed things, give them incentive for it. Publicize it. Make it work. I think 3 minutes is up.
Thank you.
Jim Shannon again, Tascaro. Several things on the energy area. Rebates. When I had my home, I did put in new windows and try getting the rebate. I tried for 2 years several different times and end up maybe being mandated, I don't know. As for the neighborhood solar plant, Mr. Colomarino, not. Why would we want to get into a battle with, legal battle with utility companies? I mean, rather be at the city level, county, state, federal. Makes no sense. Again, it's taxpayers' money that you're throwing around there, and I'm not comfortable with that. And we're slowly sliding towards some of these things when it comes to our property rights and as homeowners and individuals. My fear is that as some of these voluntary measures that we talked about in the energy area aren't taken advantage of by a lot of the property owners, it might become mandates by the state. And that's a strong possibility is they don't see those things taken advantage and then we're not meeting their requirements. They might start mandating that. That's a fear of mine. Mm-hmm. And again, talking about Mr. Colomarino, you talk about all this money that we give to low income or people can't afford it. I mean, where is this funding going to come from? I mean, the question is, where is that funding coming from? Where is the money? The state's out of money. We're out of money. Where does the funding come from? I mean, it's. I hear all this talk about wanting to do this and help that, but where is the money coming from for all this stuff we're doing? I mean, is it going to come out of our pockets? Where? As for 4E, the city already is doing that. The city staff, Warren and the rest of the staff, they've done a great job the last many years of being ahead of the game here, and my hat's off to them. And they're thinking outside of the box on a lot of things, and they deserve a lot of praise and credit for that. And they have us in a great position to go in this, even though it is pretty ugly. And I would say we need to be real careful. If we want to implement an ordinance on developers. Let's just wait and see, because with the new stuff that's coming down the pike, that stuff might be mandated anyway. So let's just keep that friendly door open to developers for as long as possible for the foreseeable future. So other than that, there's a long ways to go through all this, and I appreciate your guys' time. But I need to go home and go to bed and get up early and got to pay those taxes that Mr. Mark Colomarino wants to give away.
Michael Ladner, Atascadero. I applaud your patience and tolerance. God forbid we slide into self-sufficiency in energy. I just had a follow-up question on 4M. Would the city be required to adopt that particular principle if we were to look at either putting in solar panels on the...
I've seen systems in, I think, San Diego landfill where they're capturing the methane as well. And it's a a pretty impressive system of piping that goes underneath where they're burying all the garbage, but it's collecting the gases, and they're able to use that gases as a resource, an energy resource. It was pretty impressive, and I saw the video on that probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe more than that. And I don't know how expensive the system was, but I think it would be something to look into, but something probably is for the wastewater would be much simpler, but I think it's something to look into. I agree.
We can do some research and bring that back to you at the next meeting in terms of what the value is.
Well, look, it's 9:30. Do we want to press on or take a break and then press on or finish the rest of it next time? So
I'd like to respond to the comments that were made,
sure,
misstating what I had said, in case there are people watching who might also have misunderstood my comments the way Mr. Shannon did. There's nothing to be afraid of, Mr. Shannon, in anything I said. I don't know why you're so fearful. What I suggested about neighbors getting together to have a solar installation is not, it doesn't talk about anything mandatory. The idea is that the problem for most homeowners is it's costly to invest in solar panels and an installation. If people could work together, neighbors, one neighbor might have an ideal area for a group of solar panels. They could work together and put in solar panels there, all privately, without any public intervention at all. Now, if the governments or the utility companies offered incentives, so much the better. But that's the idea. I don't know how you found that something that made you fearful. That's private enterprise of the purest form. People working together to try to save money cooperatively, and with government agency adopt a program that gives money away. So I don't know where that came from, but I hope there's no confusion in the minds of people watching this about what I said.
Okay, let's, I think we resolved that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I ask Warren a question?
Sure.
Warren, could we continue this meeting to our next regularly scheduled meeting?
Yes, you could if you wish.
Would we be able to still make our time frame in regards to getting it to the council in the timely manner that we expected in March?
Yeah, your next meeting is next Tuesday, so we can just continue this to next Tuesday. We don't have a heavy agenda, so we could definitely do a little bit more if you want, or you could just continue it, date certain, to next Tuesday. That's fine as well.
Mr. Chairman, I have one last question. I'm keeping track as we go through these various measures of the full-time equivalent staff time that's required. For all the ones that we've basically given a thumbs up to, we're up to, with $100,000 being one full-time equivalent, we're up to $88,000,
yeah,
for staff. Do we have the staff to do this? Or is this going to be an additional person, or what's the story on that?
Well, that's definitely going to be a challenge that as we run the spreadsheet, we're going to want to look at that. That's going to be obviously a big concern of the council. To the degree this can be spread around among a number of people in different departments, maybe we can pull it off, but obviously we're not going to be in a position where we're going to be hiring anybody or adding any staff to do this. So it will have to be something that can be divided up among a lot of different employees to make it work.
Thank you.
Before we break up, I think there's two programs that are kind of stuck in here that would probably satisfy 80 or 90% of the city's requirement. One has to do with the $80-90 million a year tax leakage was to plant drought-tolerant trees. Drought-tolerant trees do not absorb CO2. You want a tree that is vigorously growing. And so if the objective of this is to save water, that's contrary to promoting vigorous growth. As an example, a couple of years ago, the water company promoted a program where homeowners could do aeration of their lawns, taking out those plugs, which made watering the lawn more effective and efficient, but also promoted a lot of vigorously growing green grass. I think there's some programs that we could put together to promote a healthier community for all our hundreds of thousands of trees that would absorb a tremendous amount of CO2. And also, I think we could get some really good credit for the Colony Square project and the Walmart project that are going to come into being, and we can put a number on all the thousands of miles that are going to be saved, where people aren't going to have to drive down to Paso or up to Paso or down to San Luis Obispo. In my mind, those are the big ticket items. And I agree with you that we shouldn't have all these administrative programs that are, eat up a lot of staff time. And so, Warren, what's your comment on that?
On the drought-tolerant tree issue, or?
Well, I mean, just the type of credit we could get for the Del Rio project and the development of the Colony Square project in terms of reducing gas miles driven and all that, and
well,
that would affect the whole CO2 thing.
They did add a program, which is, I think, 5K, which is service nodes, specifically at our request. And we haven't been able to quantify that yet, but we are working with the Air District to quantify the reduction in what we call trips outside or leakage outside the community. So a request as well. I think the problem with that one is that it doesn't equate to a high reduction in greenhouse gas credits. I think we can be fairly more aggressive with some of the assumptions, and I think, you know, it'd be appropriate for the commission to give us direction to push that as far as we can in terms of the assumptions in terms of tree preservation, tree planting, tree growth, carbon capture and sequestration, and all that sort of stuff. So I think there's definitely some room there to squeeze more credit out of that section.
Now, there's two things here, and I'll end it with this. One is to physically reduce CO2, and the other is to come up with mechanisms that absorb CO2. And the great absorbers of CO2 are trees, grass, plants. And to promote that and put a number on it, I think would be way ahead of the game. And my simple suggestion, everybody can think about it, is I think if we had a program, work with all the tree trimmers and arborists in the city to promote a program where voluntary, where they'd come out and take care of people's trees, trim them, where needed, the vigorous growth that comes back is a tremendous source of absorbing CO2, and you can put a number on that. So that would be, and I don't see anywhere in any of the reports where it even hints at that. So drought-tolerant trees do not absorb a lot of CO2. I mean, that's sort of part of the whole, you know, drought tolerant thing, but it may save water, but it doesn't absorb CO2. Anyway, before we break up, does anybody want to chime in on any last bite of the apple here?
Well, I have a question, Chuck.
Sure.
Has a decision been made regarding the schedule? We're not going to go any farther tonight. Is that the idea?
Well, it's up to you guys. You know, I have a pretty high level of energy, but that's just me. But
you could then devote the rest of the meeting to this item.
Okay. We'll have to be a lot more efficient. I'm going to get through this.
That sounds good to me.
And in interest of conserving energy, perhaps we won't have to reprint all this information for us if we save it all.
We won't reissue the staff report, so this is just a continuation. Hold on to everything. So we do need a motion, since it's a continuation. We'll need a motion to continue a date certain to next Tuesday at 7 o'clock.
I move that we adjourn this meeting after, or that we continue the discussion of the item at our next scheduled meeting a week from tonight, and that we finish the agenda before we leave, the rest of the agenda.
I'll second that motion with my thumbs up.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Let's call the roll.
Commissioner Bentz?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner DeRees?
Yes.
Commissioner Wolf?
Yes.
And Chairperson Ward?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Okay, before we end, any, Warren, you got any reports you want to give?
Yeah, just a couple brief things. The City Council did have their strategic planning session last weekend, so they discussed a number of programs and goals for the city. Economic development, public safety continue to be very high on the list. We're going to be coming back to them with a number of economic development programs that will likely include the Planning Commission, updates to the zoning ordinances, some additional development opportunities on the Hoff property downtown, getting this Colony Square project going or were identified as high priority. So we expect to be working on those and imagine some of that will trickle through the Planning Commission. But it was a good session, and I think the City Council is real excited about things and opportunities moving forward. And also just in terms of development activity, we've really seen it continue to pick up. Last week was our busiest week yet of the year for issuing residential permits, and we've had a busy year already. So it continues to move along fairly well, and we're excited about the opportunities. We'll make sure the Planning Commission is involved in all of it as we move forward.
Do you think the staff